You brought up something interesting, which is like copying a rule set between nets. I'll be honest, I've had to do that at times, and I've done it through like a very, I'll be honest, strange looking query, and then copying that around to different rules to make sure I get that rule applying to all these different nets. And then I think the priorities can kind of mess you up too, because in the rules and constraints editor, they do run by priority.
And I think it is that you the language, as I said, they kind of you've got power under the hood, but sometimes you do really want to be able to just do the simple thing simply. And I think that's one of the things that this has done. And you can set up your rule and go, okay, so now apply this to this, apply this to this, and then that's great. And I think it's just really think I think it's freed you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Altium On Track podcast. I'm your host, Zach Peterson. Today, we're talking with Andy Critcher, Director of Total Board Solutions. He's part of the beta program, and he has been testing out the new Constraint Manager feature in the newest version of Altium Designer. So I'm very excited to talk to him today about his impressions of the new feature. Andy, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Why don't you do me a favor and introduce yourself since you are new on the podcast and maybe go over your story of how you got into the electronics industry?
Okay, so I'm one of the directors, as you said earlier, Zach, here at Total Board Solutions. And I started, as you can tell by all the gray hairs, a long time ago in PCB layout world. I started off as essentially an apprentice at a defense company. And then through different machinations, I joined Mental Graphics. Am I allowed to say that on this call? As a initially as a support engineer, and then transitioned to become an applications engineer for all the layout products, really. So simulation as well as layout capture, that kind of thing, libraries. And then again went on to a European product specialist. And then my final incarnation there was as a product architect for some of the tools that we did. For the past, I got to a point where I just moved on and joined Total Board Solutions in 13 and a half years ago, about the same time as we moved across to Altium Designer. So that's really kind of my background in a nutshell.
You said you have a lot of experience, as indicated by your visual features. You mentioned that you got into this kind of as an apprentice. I get a lot of questions from folks who want to get into the industry, want to get into PCB design and engineering, and I think they have trouble getting into it because they have trouble getting an internship, which I think is kind of the modern day, you could say, equivalent of something like an apprenticeship. So, what are your impressions or advice for young people who might want to get into this industry?
I think, as you say, it is quite difficult. Here in the UK, they do have schemes for different companies, but I think it's trying to identify a specific company you want to work with and sort of, I suppose, badgering them, for want of a better term. And I think the other thing that has changed from our time was that part of the apprenticeship scheme, you would get training at a local college or university. And now I think that's a very much a prerequisite of going through that process, so that you have the skill set for not only, say, shall we say, layout, the traditional drafting, as well as the electronics industry. You definitely need to be looking at that.
And then have you seen a pretty clear fusion of the EE and PCB layout disciplines over time into really one job title? Because that's something that I've noticed quite a bit.
No, I agree. I think it has moved on. When we started, it was very two distinct disciplines. You had the drawing office, if anyone else out there remembers these, and then you had who did all the physical layout, perhaps did the actual schematics themselves, put them onto Mylar, and then it moved on. So engineers, initially at the company I was at, it didn't have a lot of access to the schematic capture tools, and if they do, it would be at very small chunks of time, a lot of time researching. But I think as time's gone on, it's become more of a single focus where people do some layout as well as doing the actual electronic design. So yes, definitely. And I think the two disciplines, that's why it's quite difficult if you come from one side or the other, is trying to get the other skill set. You know, a lot of companies, I was going to mention with, you know, about TBS, is we work with a lot of companies who do have electronics engineers, but they don't really have the back end, as we would call it, the layout skill set, don't know about fabrication, all those things. So it's quite an important part of it, you know, how a board's made. We always say that everyone needs to go to a fab house, see how it's made, go to an assembler, and can see how that works.
Yeah, that was a real eye opener for me, just going in and seeing the actual fab house. Like it's one thing to read about it and, you know all the vocabulary for the process, but to like have someone who runs the process walk you through a facility is always really eye opening.
I agree. I mean, we've been to quite a few, but I think it was when we saw the plating plant, this particular plating plant, it dropped 500 amps, and you see the scale of it, and you may be getting this very small board, but the machinery that's doing it is humongous. And over time, we, again, from the grey hairs, we've been and seen the industry change in that way. So things like it used to be dip etching, now it's spray etching, and the changes that's made to the board, how you can make them and how more accurately you can actually etch them. So yeah, I agree. It's definitely something to go and see, because I think you get a good appreciation of what is possible.
So just switching gears here for a moment, you said earlier in your background that you I think worked for Mentor Graphics. So was Mentor the first tool that you learned to use?
Well, actually, I used computer vision first. So computer vision, if I remember correctly, originally started off as like a piping tool. And someone in computer vision must have said, oh, piping, PCB design's not 1,000 miles away from each other. So I initially started as a mechanical engineer, which is the way most of us started. And then electronic side, they asked me to go on that section, and as I did that, I really enjoyed it. And then we got to CADS 4X, if anyone is out there remembers that. That was when it started. Before that, we were in two colors, green and light green. And so as things went on, we then got CADS 4X, which we had two color terminals, because we were doing 8-layer boards then, which was quite technology leading. And then we went to Mentor, and then we needed something more powerful. We needed something at that time with simulation capabilities for engineering teams, and we kind of tagged along. So yeah, we ended up with a, again, board station, what was the initial carnation.
So what was it like making the switch over to using Altium? I ask
No,
this
go
because
ahead.
I've been told many times that when you learn that first CAD tool, you tend to kind of be a little biased towards the way that original CAD tool works. And some people can find the switch to be non-intuitive, right? You go into a new
No.
program and
Oh,
where do you find
definitely,
all the
yeah.
stuff, right? They can be a little non-intuitive for some people. Some people have trouble making that switch.
I agree, and I think the thing is that the designer knows what he wants to do. You've just given him a complete new language, and I remember when I was an AE, I would go and see different potential customers who were trying to transition to Mentor. And I remember, I think it was Cadence call it rats, Sidecards call it from twos, Verybest called it something. So everywhere you went, you had a different name for the same thing, which is a connection, as it's called in. And I think it's getting that is one of the things that is kind of getting over. And I think I'll be honest, when we went to Altium, it is different from Board Station, Extremely, and Expedition. But it wasn't an o I'll be honest, it wasn't an onerous transition. I think once we started to know where things were, how things behaved, we were pretty productive pretty quickly. But it is really, as you say, it's a nomenclature. I always remember one of my potential customers was always hung up on the fact that what we used to call signal layers are called metal layers. And I had to, every time I went to the meetings, I had to remember to call them metal layers, because that's how we saw it. So, but I think once you get over that, it's actually pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and then with metal layers, you can break that out into signal layers and plane layers.
And that's the other thing as well, is because some people are very pro planes and some people are very anti planes. And as we're a consultancy, we listen to what the customer really wants to do. But yeah, it you're quite right. And then you get down into these little rabbit holes and different ways. Altium has kind of three different ways of adding, let's say, a copper flood, copper pour, whereas some tools only have one or two, and it's just understanding as well what you can use them for. And it's kind of, for me, it's a little bit running and walking. You want to get to the end because you've still got to get your jobs out. And you say to your boss, "Well, I haven't used it before. I'm not that experienced. I've experienced in the old tool." And your boss is going to say, "Well, you still need to get the job done." So initially, your first navigation is kind of get through a little bit knife and fork. But as time goes on, I think you build up that expertise in the new tool, and again, you start to see all the good bits that are in there, as well as the bits that you just don't know what to do.
I think it's like anything, right? It's you play with it enough and focus enough time on it, and then that program becomes second language.
And I think, when you got, as well, if you got people around you can bounce off. I tried this, I did this, I didn't, this didn't work. And I think a little bit of patience, but I think, over time, you do definitely get there. You definitely get there.
So ever since you have come to use Altium, at some point you started participating in the beta program. So can I ask why? It seems like a beta program might be a little time consuming because you're basically testing something for free. So what are the benefits for you of being part of the beta program?
I think, every time there's an iteration of a tool, there's a bunch of release notes, and you read through, well, hopefully you read through those and try and, because I think, again, as a consultancy, we're always trying to do things a little bit quicker and get the most out of the tool. Tools aren't free, so you do want to get your bang for the buck. And I think that that's like the first stage of going through and seeing what's happening, what you can use. But I think the thing for me, the thing I like about the beta is you can, A, get to see what's in development, get a feel for where Altium is going and how they can support you in your process. And also, it's important that the beta, you can, just like you can create a call, raise a ticket, you can do exactly the same thing on the beta. So you can give feedback into whether something's working well, whether you think it should be tweaked. And Altium are really good in getting back to you and giving you feedback on your feedback, for want of a better term. And I think, you're really kind of helping the tool direction to a degree, and making sure that when it comes out, there is a quality there that you can feel confident to move into that new. When again, when you're in the middle of a project, just to turn around and say, "Yeah, we just updated the latest and greatest," there's always an element of risk there. And I think having this heads up, you hit the ground running, really. And I don't think it isn't vast amounts of time you have to spend doing this. I mean, I would say, for me, I'm in perhaps a slightly different position because obviously I own the company. So if I want to spend a couple of hours playing with the tool, I can. But that's I'm not spending lots and lots of time on looking at this and seeing and seeing what's going on. The information you get, it does, it's just like documentation. It tells you what's coming up, what's in there, how to use it, and you can just go and say, "Yep, that looks good," or put some feedback. You can see what everyone else is finding as well. So you can see everyone else's feedback as well as your own on the website. So it really is a good heads up of what's going on. And I've been doing it for 3 years, 4 years.
Yeah, that's really interesting too. And it actually makes me really happy to hear that the folks at Altium are so engaged with the beta users and really want to get their feedback about what's working, what's not working, what can be improved.
It's definitely for sure. I mean, I've had lots of conversations with the team, and we've had calls like this really to also show difficulties or things, questions for the tool. So it's been good, and they also do webinars for the tools. so you can see what's come in and how it should be, or how they're envisioning it to be used. Because again, some of these tools change the flow paradigm, the working paradigm. You know, if you look at A365, that's quite a step change, a very positive step change. But again, getting the most out of that.
Yeah, that's, and I think that's really important for a program like Altium, but also for a company like Altium that really is so community focused. It's not just something for the big, huge organizations out there. There are a lot of smaller companies. There are a lot of individual designers who use this, and you know, the ability to provide that feedback directly to the company building the software, I think, is extremely important.
Definitely. No, I agree. It's an ongoing process as well. So you can see changes coming through. I mean, if you do get time to read the release notes, you can see, you know, there's always good stuff in there, really.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks may treat the release notes kind of like a terms of service for a website. You know, you just scroll to the end so that it allows you to go to the next screen. Yeah. But yeah, I think it is a good idea to read the release notes. And I will admit, I have not read them thoroughly when the new versions come out, but I do skim them to see if there's anything that catches my eye. So I'll have to do a better job of reading those release notes in the future.
Yeah, I think it's also a habit from my old days, because I used to write the release notes.
Oh, so, okay.
I think, let's put something in there. And I think sometimes there's there was one of our customers, again, if digressing, you may want to cut this, but I found that there's one of the things on schematic is that you can make reference, you know, your engineers always writing notes, you know, put R1 next to R2, and then someone reannotates and R2 and R1 are no longer the same. You know, you can use the at sign and it will do that for you. So for one of our customers, that was a real big thing. They hadn't thought of asking for it, but it was a real big thing. So reading through that release note, I found it, told them, they were happy. Had another cup of coffee and they went off. But that's the other thing I think as well, is sometimes you find little gems in there that you didn't know. And so, yeah, so sorry, perhaps I'm just quite sad.
Well, shifting gears just for a moment, one of the new features that's coming out in AD24 that you have been looking at is the Constraint Manager. Tell us, or I guess tell the audience, including the new people who may be watching now, what the Constraint Manager is and maybe how it's different from the existing workflow that's in older versions of Altium Designer.
Okay, so the Constraint Manager is essentially a new GUI, graphical user interface, that's been written around the existing core rule set. So at the moment, rightly or wrongly, my definition of the way Altium has traditionally worked is that you have essentially like a SQL world where you type in your rules. You can add your net classes, that kind of thing, and then you can make rules around it, add them into rule areas, that kind of stuff. But now what they've done is they've done more of a, I'm not sure wrap is the right word, but they've written an interface that still interacts with the base rules, but makes rule entry a lot easier and more intuitive to actually put those rules in. So you'll see now it's more net centric rather than being rule centric. So you will see a list of all the nets within your design. You can organize them within that interface into net classes, move things around. So you've got DDR, that kind of thing. You can put the banks in, have them as individuals. And then that, some of the things that does for you is that means that you can now have hierarchical rules where you can just add if you want them all to be matched, you only have to add it at the net class level and it will come down for all those banks, that kind of thing. Not sure if that's painting the right picture, really.
A little bit, but you actually just said something interesting here, because one of the questions that came through the YouTube channel, or maybe not a question, but more of a complaint, was that the Constraint Manager did away with nets and net classes and things like this and that kind of organization that I think people are all used to. And you're saying that's not correct. It still does exist.
The net classes are accessed in a different way now. So it is from, let's say, a spreadsheet environment where you can group nets together, add a net class, and it will manage the net classes for you. So you can see them. You can I'm trying to think of the correct terminology for Microsoft Excel, but you get little arrows, you can click them and you can open them up, collapse them down, that kind of thing, expand them out. That's the word I'm looking for, sorry. So you can expand them out, but you can organize that data in that fashion. I think one of the things that I think is a major improvement is that, so we do, being a consultancy for different companies, we do a lot of different designs. So we do some very simple designs. I'd say simple, like breakout boards, someone going from one connector to another. To one of the boards we've done is a 24-layer high density interconnect. It's got three layers of microvias top and bottom, and it's a computer card. So we kind of do a great thing. But one of the things that we part and parcel of that as well is that we do a lot of mixed signal and some boards with some very high voltages on. And an example at the moment is that we got a design with, it's got 10 different NET classes, traditional NET classes. So, yep, I can put those on with directives. But each one of those, because it's all voltage based, each one of those has to have a different clearance to its partner. So, in traditional rules entry, I've got 78 rules that I've had to write in to manage that complexity. And we did it that way. Because with the engineer, they're still fine-tuning the rules and how they want to manage that. But with the constraint manager, I would just get a matrix, and I only have to enter in the matrix, which is not 78 rules. I'm not having to do that multiple times. The other thing is that my customer isn't you basically they're supplying this data in PDF format as well. So they've got an Excel spreadsheet, and I can cut and paste from their Excel table directly into the constraint manager. So you can see straight away that anyone looking at this can read it. They can just see a table, and they can see that, 5 volts to a 1,000 volts has to be this value, rather than have to go through a plethora of rules just to find that one to change it. It is m making some of the rules entry a lot less complex.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you bring up power systems here where you could have voltage-based clearances. I could see this kind of expanding into some other areas with using power as an example, where now you can break it out into multiple voltage ranges by groups, by net classes. You could do this with directives, or you can just go in directly to the constraint manager and edit it manually.
Yeah, I think it's that there's still the ability to add in if you've got some really specific rule, which I again, coming from my background, I like that. I like the fact that with the SQL, I can still add in those really quirky rules that you sometimes get. If it's a Tuesday and it's on the left-hand side of the board, then it has to be this far away, that kind of thing. But in the main, a lot of the rules we do are repetitious. I've got my 8-layer board with microvia top and bottom. I export my rules. I bring my rules in, or I make it as a template. There's lots of ways to do that, but it does mean that you've got that capability. And I think it's taken a lot of the standard complexity that you have to learn, say, and we say away, but you still have the power if you want it. Makes it a lot easier for the especially new users as well, I think. When if you transition from another tool, you're going to be a lot more familiar.
Yeah, I think I can see the value here because, if you go back into the rules and constraints editor in like AD 23 and you look at all the rules, they're all broken down by like a rule type, and then you assign nets to the rules, whereas this is broken out by object and you assign rules to the object. It kind of flips it on its head.
Exactly. And I think, after a couple of, the first time you call it up, you think, okay, what do I do where? But I think it soon becomes apparent that that's the process, really. And I think one of the other things that aids in that is that if you set up a rule, let's say 50 ohm or RF 50 ohm, and you set up that rule and you think, oh, I've got a bunch of nets, you can save that as a constraint set. And then you can just apply that bunch of rules to another set of components.
Oh, I
Oh, sorry,
see.
another set of nets. You don't have to keep going back and going, okay, so I need to add another net to my list of nets, or I have to put it in the same class. You can just apply that around. And then when you go into the editor at the bottom, you can either edit the individual net or you can edit the constraint set that it's part of. And then, so you can very quickly, as you said, the paradigm's changed, shifted a bit, where it's more of the objects centric rather than being the actual rule centric.
Yeah,
and I found that has made things a bit easier.
You brought up something interesting, which is like copying a rule set between nets. I'll be honest, I've had to do that at times, and I've done it through like a very, I'll be honest, strange looking query, and then copying that around to different rules to make sure I get that rule applying to all these different nets. And then I think the priorities can kind of mess you up too, because in the rules and constraints editor, they do run by priority.
And I think it is that the language, the language, as I said, they've kind of, you've got the power under the hood, but sometimes you do really want to be able to just do the simple thing simply. And I think that's one of the things that this has done. And you can set up your rule and go, okay, so now apply this to this, apply this to this, and then that's great. And I think, it's just really I think it's freed you from some of the, to do the example I was given earlier with the net classes, you'd have had in constraints, as I said, it's taken me 78 entries to do that. And I got to be honest, that was a fun afternoon. But to add into that becomes a little bit, you have to know which one to add it into. And I think it's just not very portable in terms of when you're looking at those rules, you have to sift through the rules again. Whereas with the matrix, you can just see it directly in front. And you can, and again, they've added in one of the things that has always been a little bit challenging, especially for new users, if you've got different rules on the internal and external layers. And now you have that's just been pulled out, so you can say I want it for all layers or external, internal. So there's lots of little things in there as well, which I think people are going to find help simplify the everyday kind of rule setup.
Yeah, that's a good point with internal versus external, because that was another thing, especially with power systems, some of the stuff I've had to work on, where you do have to break it out by internal and external. And if you don't know the query, what do? You probably just set a global value. And if you don't set the right value, then there might be a problem when you go to manufacture and actually test this thing.
Yes. As I said, the current way it works, I've got used to it. As I said, I'm a bit sad reading the release notes, but one of the things I think about it is it's a bit like a dictionary. If you don't know how to spell the word, how can you look it up? And when you need that that query, some of them, I'll be honest, some of them aren't that obvious at times. So you do have to, as you said, it's a bit of trial and error. There's some ways around it that our team helped me with, especially using the filter capability. But yes, you're right. You're right, Zach. It is, there is a learning curve with that. And I think, the constraint manager will simplify a lot of the standard things that everyone does, really, from day in, day out.
And another thing you mentioned it's a matrix. You've said that a few times. In my in my mind, because I haven't played with this yet, so I'm I'm going to now after this. But in my mind, I think, if you look at the clearance rules in like AD23 and earlier, right, it's set up as basically as a matrix. Is it taking that kind of format and applying it universally to an object, but broken out by rule and value?
Yes. So the matrix really is for your different net class to net class rules. This is where it's really being applied. So if you've got five net classes, you'll see, using the power analogy again, 0 volts, 5 volts, 25 volts, 48 volts on the left, and they're going across the top. And then in the columns, you can just add in the individual rules at that level. But if you click on a cell, let's say we were putting 0 volts to 0 volts, so that's going to be a pretty standard. But if you wanted different rules internally, when you click on that actual cell, down the bottom, you will see the usual, the thing that we're all familiar with, of the clearance matrix that you get down the bottom, that you get from pad to track to copper pour, you'll see that as well. And then at the bottom, you'll see some tabs where it says internal, external, essentially, or by layer, and you can have all layers or whatever. And then you can fill in that. So you, the top level really is going to apply all those rules between those net classes, and you will not have to learn what all those net classes are, basically. It just is one, hit one, and the bottom of the screen, whatever, whenever you hit on the cells against an object, what it would do is it would take you to the appropriate screen that we know and love of clearances, widths, vias, via styles, that kind of thing.
I see. So you mentioned that, you know, spending an afternoon setting up 78 rules
yep.
was something that you've had to do in the prior interface.
Yep.
I don't know anybody who wants to necessarily spend an afternoon setting up a list of 78 rules. So I guess my question for you is, has the new interface produced really tangible changes in the amount of time or effort or headache that creating rules and assigning rules requires?
Yes, I mean, that specific example from an afternoon, because obviously I put them in, I didn't check them to make sure that I haven't gone snowblind with the data, but I just called up I can just call up the matrix that they've given me in Excel, because that's how, that said, they manage internally the calculations, and I can just select all those cells and then paste it straight in to the matrix. So it's come more down to my dexterity with Excel, really, rather than Altium. So a minute, perhaps, if I stuttered a bit, clicked wrong. But yeah, it really has, you know, that has trivialized it. And I think the thing is, well, again, it is checking of it. It is so much easier because each one of them is different. So you got to read a line across, read the two net classes, make sure that they're what you want. Whereas all you got to do is look at a matrix and compare it to the one that you just copied it from.
And I can imagine that this makes some communication with people who maybe are not spending most of their days inside of a PCB design tool much easier.
No, actually, that is an excellent point, because I think I especially forget that the consumer of what we do are normally, and I mean, it's not in a nice way, but non-literate with PCBs. I mean, the first time we had a 10-layer board up on the screen, one of our bosses came down and said, "How the hell do you read that?"
Yeah.
And it's just what you get used to, you know, yeah, different colors and things. And I think it's correct. I mean, the same thing with the 3D viewing capability, that whenever I show it to any one of the managers, we go into that mode because they can relate to that. That, you know, it's a physical thing, and that, and I think it's the same with this. They can see very quickly how the rules are set up. They can, you know, with the tabular format of all the nets, again, they can see the nets. Whereas when it's just a bunch of rules, they're just looking at how creative we are with the naming, really, more than actually the data.
One thing that happens to me is, you know, you should, if you show like a screenshot or, you know, a live viewing of the rules, like, well, what does that rule mean? Like, it's not intuitive if you're not a pro designer, or if you don't spend a lot of time in PCB design software.
Agreed. No, it is. You spend a lot of time explaining that. Just anecdotal, but the first time when we were using our thermal tool, the tool, just like all the tools, they grade the temperature graph, and unfortunately the top hot color was white. And so when one of the managers came over, he said, "Is that white hot?" And no, it's just a grade. It's just a gradient. Okay, it's just going from hot to cold. But yeah, it is. We get very blasé about we're used to reading what we're looking at, and we have to explain it to a wider world, really. So again, this will help, because when you click on the, as I said, when you click on the data at the bottom, you'll see the actual rule entry, as it were. And again, with the good graphics they got for that, you can very quickly and easily show other non-PCB people how it's working.
So, would you say that this particular feature has improved your overall workflow for the designs that your company works on?
I think, it's definitely, I think the specific ones, the high power, that really is helping. And we have things with DDR that's definitely helping as well, being able to put the banks in and being able to have different rules between the banks. What, don't get me wrong, it wasn't horrendous before, but it was more time consuming. And what this means is that we can, and again, we can show that to everyone else. It's, the list of banks, and this is what you've got. So this is how it kind of works. And it will definitely improve with the, because obviously at the moment with the beta, then it's we're kind of saying, this is definitely going to be an improvement on the way in which we do things now. And again, we know that for some of our people we work with, they don't spend all day in the tools, so they go away, they come back, and they think, well, should it be in Polygon or is Polygon, when they're writing their SQL, and so they have to go and get another design and bring it back up. Whereas I think this kind of thing is definitely going to again simplify it and put that, as I would know it, as a wrapper around there. And because it is an Excel style approach, it definitely makes that much easier. We all have to use Excel one way or another, even if it's just to do our home accounts. It is pervasive. We're all very used to how it works. Even if you have to use a hierarchy in there. So yeah.
And as far as collaboration with somebody else via Excel, it sounds like that's a real benefit too, because it forces you into a third-party program, but it's still a common language as far as communicating with someone who, again, is not a pro PCB designer. Maybe they're just a front-end engineer, but they know that there are certain rules that they need to enforce, and Excel is a convenient medium for providing that.
And I think you're right, 100%. The big thing is, you said the right word. For me, it's convenient. When you mentioned earlier about transitioning, and I think it's not only transitioning from using a new language of tool, but there's a cultural change as well. All the maxims, it ain't broke, don't fix it. And when someone said, well, I've always used Excel. And so you got to do two things really. You got to change the tool, and then you got to move them on from what they currently use. So I think when we've used a step approach, and then when we've shown them, well, actually, if you do it this way in the first place, they've had two bites at the cherry kind of thing. They don't have to, it's not like someone picked up their office and moved it somewhere and have to find it the following day, which is always traumatic for people. But it really is. I think you take them along and you get them to buy in to the change. And with the Excel, it definitely gets you to that point, and you say, yeah, we're not impacting now, but you can see you could have entered this directly in, and all of a sudden they're going, oh, yeah, that's a good point. Don't have to do this. Don't have to, okay, yeah. So I think it is useful having, especially as a transition tool as well, because it's what they're used to.
Well, this has all been really interesting, and I'm really hopeful that of two things. Number one, more people will find an easy transition into the Constraint Manager, but also number two, maybe we'll get some more beta users coming out of the audience for this podcast episode.
And just on the beta, when you look, there's going to be things that you may not be interested in, but you see it and you go, okay, yeah, will I won't do that. And then there will be things that you're interested in, and you don't have to do everything. You can just focus on those bits you think, yeah, that looks cool. I'll play with that for a while and tell them what I think. So yeah.
That's a great point. That's a great point. You don't have to get into this huge program. You can really find the points where you can provide value as far as testing a feature and evaluating it.
Yep,
Great. Well,
definitely.
Andy, thank you so much for talking to us today. This has been really interesting.
Oh, good. And thank you for the time, for the platform to waffle on about stuff, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. As new features come out, as you're involved in testing them, we'd love to have you back on to talk about this.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'd love to. Love to.
To everyone that's out there watching and listening, we've been talking with Andy Critcher, Director of Total Board Solutions. If you are watching on YouTube, make sure to hit the subscribe button. You'll be able to keep up with all of our tutorials and podcast episodes as they come out. If you're interested in learning more about Andy and what he does, as well as the beta program, make sure to check out the show notes. You can check out the links there and learn as much as you need about both Andy, his company, and the beta program. Last but not least, don't stop learning, stay on track, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, everybody.